A cold one masks the abstract. Step back and feel the contrast. Echoes of a broken past. Before my eyes, the future flashed. Concepts, the moment past. Fear of the manifest. Waging battle on my spirit. Surrender to what's fearless. See what bodies mix of love and lust. When love was hard to touch, I toss a prayer your way. Namaste, baby, namaste. Namaste, namaste.
Welcome to Yoga Talk, the Yoga International podcast. I'm your host, Kat Hegberg. I'm the editor of Yoga International.
And I'm Michael Carlucci. I'm one of the content developers at Yoga International.
And that was the Householders with our intro, Namaste Nation. Today, nice. Michael and I are once again joined by our super awesome Ayurvedic friend, Catherine Templeton.
Catherine Templeton's about to get real in here.
I'm getting real right now.
Getting real as we speak.
Hey, well, I try to be real.
Yeah, you're real.
Yeah. So Catherine joined us recently, a couple episodes ago, for our Sex, Drugs, and Ayurveda podcast.
All the good stuff.
If you haven't, my kids were horrified.
Did your kids listen?
The whole nation.
Horrified.
The whole nation.
My mom, I called my mom on Mother's Day, and she listens to the podcast every now and then, and she's like, so should I listen to that sex podcast or should I just skip that one? And I was like, you can listen to it if you want.
Listen, listen to the math.
Yeah, it's not terribly non-parent-friendly.
No, it was fine. I think Jack was a little horrified, my middle son, by a couple of the terms we used, but he worked right through that.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, and he felt like it was educational.
Hey, Jack, we heard your mom talking about sex, drugs, and Ayurveda.
Yeah, he wasn't excited to hear about that. And I think that was healthy, actually. Yeah,
so if you guys haven't checked that one out, definitely do. It was a couple podcasts back. Should be right there on iTunes. And we're going to continue our Ayurveda conversation today.
Because there's so many questions that still need to be asked.
Oh, I have so many questions. I'm not asking those questions.
So many answers that need to be inappropriately put forth.
That's our job.
So here's my first question for you, Catherine. So a lot of us, when we think of Ayurveda, we think of the doshas. We think of vata, pitta, and kapha.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit about the doshas to our listeners that might not be so familiar with Ayurveda, like a brief rundown?
Brief is not my strong point, just to be really honest. Okay, good. All right, because I have a little bit of issue with that. So the good news about the doshas is that they are sort of cover terms. You know, they have many different meanings. For example, if we talk about someone who has some kapha dominance that's related to the elements of earth and water. So that can mean many things. It could be that they have a lot of stability because of their dominance. Could be that their frame is very stable and their joints are deeply set. Big, beautiful eyes.
Yeah. Could have been a past life. Yeah. Maybe they were a river.
Yes, that would be right. Well, rivers are directional, a little pittic, but the ocean.
Gotcha. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So kapha can mean many things. And usually we talk about it in the AYS training and other Ayurvedic trainings about the qualities or the small G's, I call them, the gunas. Not the maha gunas, not the big ones that talk about your mind, but the way the characteristics or attributes of the doshas are expressed. So they have these qualities. So kapha can be wet, dense, stable, heavy, guru, heavy. Your heavy dude is your kapha dude, your guru.
That means heavy?
Yeah.
Guru means
like
heavy?
Like the weighty one, I've heard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what Sanskrit is kind of, for me, so not a Sanskrit scholar, just to say that, took a lot, many hours of Sanskrit, still can't quite get that whole mouth palate thing going on.
Oh, where your tongue is.
Yeah,
the whole thing.
Right, and the multiple meanings. So I always explain it when I talk about gurus and these Sanskrit words, and I say it's kind of like being in Atlanta and someone tells you to go to Peachtree Street. What does that mean? Right? There are millions of Peachtree Streets in Atlanta, Peachtree Avenue, Peachtree Court, right? The whole thing. But in Ayurvedic medicine, we have specific meanings for words, and those meanings can change as Sanskrit words sometimes are wont to do with the context.
Just like with English.
Just like with any language, I suppose.
That's right.
So guru, a lot of listeners might have heard guru is, of course, like teacher or one who leads from darkness to light. And that's one meaning, kind of if you break down the etymology between the gu and the ru. But then it also, guru means, as you said, heavy or
heavy.
Right.
And that's a minor or a mini guna, right?
Yes, it's a quality of one of the attributes of the doshas. And heavy, the only one of the three doshas, the three elemental aspects of Ayurvedic medicine that is heavy, is in fact kapha. Both pitta and vata are light. So what's going to happen is you're going to look at these cover terms, kapha, things that stick together or bind. That's what that means in Sanskrit. Pitta, that which metabolizes or digests or burns. Mm-hmm. And vata, that which moves, like the wind. So sometimes you'll hear vayu and vata interchangeably in yoga speak, right? Because vayu means the wind, right?
It does.
Not Mariah. That's another word for wind.
They call the wind Mariah?
They do.
Is there way out west they've got a name for...
I'm doing kind of wagon training now, but anyhow.
And wind and fire.
Yeah.
For a lot of us, our introduction to Ayurveda is, what dosha am I? Like, I want to find out what dosha I am. And almost like, you know, you take a BuzzFeed quiz and you find out what type of bagel you are. I am a cinnamon bagel, by the way.
I'm totally an everything bagel, toasted with some salmon cream cheese.
Have you taken the quiz? Because you might...
I'm going to take
surprised.
The quiz.
I'll send you both the quiz.
Sesame.
Can you get croissant as what kind of bagel you are? Because I prefer...
Only the French.
All right.
Yeah.
But, so there's this idea like of wanting to categorize ourselves.
Right.
And that can be really confusing when we rely on these online quizzes.
Yes.
Like, I, you know, take it and it always tells me that I'm pitta. Mm-hmm. And then it always tells me that I have more vata than kapha.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I've actually seen and talked to people, I've heard, oh, you're pitta kapha. And then another person said, oh, you're pitta vata.
Right,
and
right.
And then friends will stop me in the hall and say, Kat, that's because you're so vatic. You're not vatic at all. I get so confused, Catherine. How do we know what our doshas actually
are? Well, okay, so in the old days back then, and I mean way before wagon trains, like, you know, Chataka.
Okay.
A couple thousand years ago. And up until currently, we look at understanding your prakriti, your nature, your constitutional nature by understanding your elemental makeup by how these 10 sets of opposites or these small g's, these little gunas, are seen in your physical body and in your tendencies. Can you imagine trying to take a dosha test that has you identifying the 10 sets of opposites: heavy, light, you know, sticky, smooth, wet, dry? It would be something that we wouldn't have the attention for. Right? And so what they try to do in the dosha test is help us understand who we are through these questions. And like any good researcher, you know, you can lead a witness by the way you frame the question. Or if you're like nodding yes, so you feel this way, Kat, and you're like, I kind of do. So it's not that dosha tests are misleading, but they're trying to use very clear language. But of course, just like we learn when we're talking on the podcast, you know, people hear what they want to hear, they read what they want to read, and it's all about personal interpretation.
And we have perceptions of ourselves, too, especially some cultural things. Like, I know a lot of people, it seems like, and I've certainly experienced this too, like, want to be vata, because vata is skinny. Vata is the thin, light, ethereal. And then even just the way we describe, like, you had a lovely description of kapha with the luscious hair and the big eyes, but when you go to a quiz, it's like, are you big boned? Are you heavy set?
Are you the fat girl?
I was like, no, I don't want to be that. That can be problematic with those cultural biases.
There's cultural biases, and there's this idea that it. And I'm not criticizing dosha tests because I don't personally have a better way to get people to begin to be introduced to Ayurveda.
Sure.
And I think it is a great introduction because it begins to have you begin to look at yourself from this Ayurvedic or elemental point of view, which theoretically and hopefully will create a more compassion for you towards yourself, not more self-criticism.
Yeah, and we will link to a dosha quiz in the show notes, so our listeners can experience one for themselves.
But the way we used to look at dosha wasn't through tests. Can you imagine, you know, on the tree bark, you're going to go and check different things as to, you know, what your bone size is like. What are you going to use? You don't even know.
Scratch it with a stick in the ocean sands.
Use your neem stick. So what we do is we feel your pulse. And this is where, you know, articulating, understanding the Ayurvedic pulse, it's not just its own podcast. It's a lifetime, multiple lifetimes of understanding.
Right.
The more intuitive, the more internally wise you are, the more you can check into your own depth of wisdom and internal source, the more adept you will be at being able to feel your own pulse, the more clarity you'll have in your own pulse, thus the more clarity you'll have feeling hundreds and thousands of pulses. So it's a self-study, it's a self-meditation, the pulse reading. It is a science. There are 7 levels to the pulse. But again, having everybody get access to a really proficient and attuned pulse reader is not highly likely in the next decade or two, let's say, or 10. So the dosha test is the way that the Westerners and the way our mind works now. It's quick, it's short, it's multiple choice. I get to compare and contrast myself. This is where our triggers get kicked up and, yeah. you know, what's good. There are no good or bad doshas.
No, no.
None.
If we could just get away from placing
yes,
those value judgments
right.
on things.
That's
and
right.
As a, it's always so interesting because in teacher trainings and things yes. like that, we always take the dosha quiz. Mm-hmm. And so, for some reason, everybody's vata. We know we can't all be vata. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, living up here in an ashram in the mountains, you know, in the winter, we could all be bhatically imbalanced. That's
we
for
could,
sure.
That's uh-huh. kind of uh-huh. what I, that's kind of what I suspect because mm-hmm. I don't actually think I have very much vata in my mm-hmm. constitution. You could tell me different because you're the expert. Mm-hmm. But I tend to see myself as more pitta kapha, or that mm-hmm. feels a little bit more like what's there. But as far as imbalances right. go, oh Lord, I want to drink the coffee. I want to stay up all night. I want to run around and do fun, sweaty vinyasa flows.
Yes,
and so
yes.
the vata imbalance, that seems much more present.
Well, this is why, you know, training in Ayurvedic medicine is a curious thing because you can get great baseline information on Ayurveda, but a little bit of information, not just in Ayurveda, in anything, can cause even more disturbance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because what happens is it plugs into already what's happening within ourself with understanding ourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked about this last podcast, the way I introduce Ayurveda, not that I don't say it's not a medicine, but I say it's a self-study. Because mm-hmm. that's really what you're beginning to do when you learn about Ayurveda, is you're investigating yourself. What are my bones in relationship to other people from my cultural background? What's the difference, you know, the size of my bones, my French, British, bone structure from my DNA and RNA that have been loaded in from Chalfont, mm-hmm. You know, in Goethe's generations, is going to be different than the bone structure that's loaded in from somebody who is from a very different continent, who has generational heritages that
sure.
are different cultures. So I should have a different, my medium bone structure will be different than a medium bone structure from a different part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a world medicine.
Yeah, okay.
So that's one of the things that gets tricky, first of all. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so you're like looking at this and you're looking at your bones. You're like, well, my bones are medium or large. Well, compared to what?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And we do have some norms in Ayurvedic medicine, but think about where it came from. It's from India.
Mm-hmm.
The country's big, right? And northern Indians have a different physiological attributes than southern Indians,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they live in different climates and different cultures. The mountain people have bone structure that comes from the DNA and RNA from their ancestors who ate certain foods that grew in the mountains and that they needed to weather the mountain weather. And that's kind of redundant, but to get through the mountain
weather.
Rather the weather. And people in southern India, it's hot. Right? And
yeah.
so they have to have the kind of nature that's going to do well and have high durability in the heat.
Okay.
So a lot of what our physical bodies are I call it our water sac, our elemental constitution, has to do with what the DNA and RNA, the load in from our ancestors, what they're bringing to us. So one of the ideas, if you want to sort of spiral this back to spirituality, understanding what prakriti, what constitutional nature you were born with, is intentional to help you live your dharma.
Mm. Wow.
So, right?
Yeah.
So Cirque du Soleil, right? If their
yeah.
dharma is to be able to express the beauty of the body unfolding and folding back and creating different shapes and forms and visually stimulating, if that's part of their dharma to bring that kind of joy and beauty and art to the world, we can't have them have an enormous amount of kapha dominance because we have to have some hypermobility in the joints.
Sure.
So the prakriti that these folks might be more born with, not that there aren't some kapha dominance, but vata might be a player in many of their prakriti.
It might be more prevalent.
That's
anyway.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
It's one of their dual doshas or tridosha, so that way they can live their dharma more efficiently. We're a farmhand who's working with the oxen out, you know, in the agrarian societies. To have a lot of high vata isn't going to be as useful because he's, you know, pushing or she's pushing the oxen across the land day in, day out. They're going to have some durability, mm-hmm. some real mm-hmm. steadiness.
And
kapha.
Does that kind of determine what we might be attracted to as far as that goes too? Because I would hate to be like, you know, the kapha who always dreams of being in Cirque du Soleil and then to think, I can't.
So this goes, yeah.
Or the vata fellow that wants to be, I don't know, like a linebacker.
Yeah.
It's me. You know, if I told you I was going to be a linebacker, you'd be like, you know, I don't think that's going to be a good choice for a second career.
You could do that for a brief time, but after the first
very,
injury,
very brief, yeah.
you would be out of the game. Yeah. So, and this is where, you know, I get lots of folks that sort of jump off my ladder of joy because it's not that I'm not being, you know, living your dreams and bringing your heart's desire to life, but I'm also incredibly pragmatic. Mm-hmm. And I find there's less suffering if you are living in better relationship to yourself. Mm-hmm. At least that's my experience. Sometimes when
yeah,
I totally. Have that.
Yeah. 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 When you're in alignment with your nature.
Yeah. With your true nature, with your constitutional nature. And so you do desire what you're like because that's what you have the most elements of. So people who have more fire, more pitic qualities, these qualities, we talked about these small Gs, like mm-hmm. these gunas. So they're light. They can be intense. They can have some moisture because pitta is related to water.
Right. Water and fire.
Fire and water.
Right. So they like heat. So what kind of yoga classes do you think people with pitta dominance are just drawn to?
I'm thinking the sweaty.
I like the hot yoga classes.
Yeah.
The
hot stuff.
And the cold, there's a little pitta dominance.
Just a slight. Just a little. So that's good. You know, so we're drawn to what we're like. Which is not a problem mm-hmm. as long as we're able to counterbalance that. It's all about alchemy, remember?
Sure.
So, but it can be a problem if in the middle of summer, in the middle of Dallas, I'm taking with my fire dominance lots of hot yoga classes and I'm having pungent foods like chili relleno or I'm having, you know,
sure.
I'm doing a lot of intense study.
Yeah.
I'm going to build more heat
qualities.
You're
going to get angry.
I might get a little bit...
You're going to balance it out with some...
agitated.
Cucumber lime shots to the face.
You could do that. Or your favorite Brahmi coconut oil.
Yeah.
So there's ways to work with that. Doesn't mean you can have your hot yoga classes, but think about, are you healing yourself or are you hurting yourself?
Right.
Are you driving yourself toward your prakriti, toward dosha balancing, or are you driving yourself toward greater and greater imbalance mm-hmm. and vikriti away from yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So I say, are you eating this ice cream with your kapha dominance because you really need to have some more heavy, wet, cold qualities in your day? Or is it because you like that and you're used to being imbalanced and you want to keep that imbalance mm-hmm. going?
Right. Because our culture is so balanced, right? I mean, like, we're just so got it all together in our popular modern 21st century culture.
That's it. For moments. Yeah.
So do you think that's all very helpful information, like that we can use for ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it can get a little bit unhelpful when we who are not Ayurvedic experts start projecting those things on other people? Like, that, well, you're so vata, or she's such a kapha. Oh, my God. You know,
it's 3 p.m. You know? I need to take a nap now.
For my transition.
It's kind of like you said, like with a mm-hmm. little bit of knowledge can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
And what can we as yoga people who mm-hmm. maybe have that little bit of knowledge mm-hmm. from our teacher trainings, mm-hmm. what can we do to perhaps be a little bit more aware of what we're doing in that respect?
That's a great question. And that would be, you know, if I could write that book, then my kids would go to college with a lot greater ease on mama's pocket. But one thing I can speak to is just in my work in psychiatry. So when people come in for intake at the clinic, right, and we're interviewing them to understand what it seems to be the problem, what they're suffering from, right? We're taking down notes, specifically using a type of language and understanding. You know, Ayurveda has its own language and understanding to be able to see through this particular vision. And so psychiatry, we're looking through the DSM. We're looking for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual diagnosis. The diagnosis is not the person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the person. It's just the current imbalance that person has. So if someone has a generalized anxiety, I mean, basically, welcome to being alive. Okay.
Right.
That's like that's the diagnosis any of us could go in and out of at any time, really.
Sure.
So if we have this diagnosis, it doesn't mean that we're only seeing that this person just is this generalized anxiety. There are many other things. There are many other wonderful qualities that are very healthy and nurturing, but they're identifying and their life seems to be problematic because of this cluster of symptoms or qualities, mm-hmm. like we'd say. Right. And so we don't want to look at the cluster of symptoms or qualities. We want to understand the whole person.
Sure.
So we reduce people because we're trying to have a clinical language with other treaters. We have to reduce them to these labels temporarily to know what services to provide. Right. I'm going to provide different services to support the anxious client than I am to support the depressed client.
Mm-hmm.
They need different types of treatment, different types of support, different intervention. Well, when we're talking Ayurvedically and we have just a little bit of knowledge, we often reduce ourselves to these doshas, to these overarching ideas. And even when I talk about my imbalance, if I were to say, oh, you know, I've got a vata imbalance right now, that could mean that I have really dry skin.
Sure.
Or it could mean that I'm really feeling spaced out. Or it could mean that I can't poop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. But I'm okay.
Hey, pooping happens.
We're concerned. Yeah,
good, good.
I'm all set.
I was wondering if we needed to break out the trouble.
No,
we're all
set. Do we need to get a different rating over here?
No, we're good. We're all good.
Can we talk?
Yeah.
Can we say that? Okay.
Yeah, everyone's happy this morning. Good throne action.
Well, Catherine, you know, one of the things I notice is that, like, when I get anxiety, I need to move my body. And I know from studying with you that that's like vata, let's say vata derangement, but it soothes me a little bit if I start to move my body. Is that like okay, or is that just aggravating the condition even more?
Well, here's the famous mantra. How about it depends?
Oh,
so this is a wonderful two words that we like to use in Ayurvedic medicine to talk about the fact that there are no short answers in Ayurvedic medicine, right? There, because it's an integrative medicine. We're going to be working with many concepts at once to begin to understand what is the vata imbalance. Vata needs to move. Vata must move. If we take someone that has some vata dominance and we tell them to sit still and work on a worksheet, let's take a 9-year-old boy, I'm just saying. And we say, here you go, Quan, I want you to sit here and I want you to work on this worksheet. And he starts having trouble paying attention, maybe gets really frustrated, maybe he's looking around the room, these sorts of things, because his nature is movement if he's got vata in his prakriti. Better if we can say to Quan, hey, anytime you feel like you're getting overwhelmed and you need to move your body, why don't you get up and go to the restroom and then come back? Mm. You know, get up and take, you know, get up
right,
and move around.
You can't force anybody to be still. You can't even most of the time force yourself to be still.
That's correct.
Yeah, which is why we do asana before we sit to meditate.
That's right. Or breathing practices or these sorts of things. And you have to train yourself. So it doesn't mean that vata can't sit still, but oftentimes it's going to feel a sense of imbalance in this stillness because the body needs to move. Now, breathing is movement, right? So once someone that, you know, has some vata dominance in their prakriti understands that, sometimes breathing techniques really help with the movement of vata. Other times when we're feeling more stress in that way or we're feeling a little more agitated, we need to move our physical bodies. But the way we move it is important. So working with entrainment in yoga asana, for example, moving in a way that we're moving the body systemically on the breath actually creates lots of vata pacification.
Good stuff right there.
Yeah. But moving frenetically might drive the vata into deeper imbalance.
Right.
So movement, you have to qualify what type of movement, what's the quality of the movement. Taking, I don't know, if, you know, in choreography, when we talk about things like dash, you know, float, these the choreographer's terms on how to help to have the dancers understand their movement qualities. I like to talk about those terms when I'm working with vatas because the idea is that people with vata dominance are experts at movement.
We should teach all vata people dance. Or everybody, I think. I love dance.
I think, I think dance is a beautiful way to help you stay balanced.
And it sounds like the key here is directed movement as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, as you said, that frenetic movement. Then maybe if someone is vatically imbalanced in the moment, that instead of just fidgeting around.
Yeah, sporadic movement.
Yeah, sporadic movement. Then, okay, maybe I go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I go for a run. Or maybe I do a little bit of asana. Mm-hmm. But it's a directed, intentional movement.
But you know what you're saying, Kat?
Now,
what I'm hearing back behind what you're saying, Kat, is direction, intentional, is intention again. So it's like, I think the spiritual path is trying to lead us from a place of unconscious habit patterning to... Does that sound good? Unconscious patterning to a place of conscious, intentional patterning. And then when we know our nature, we can better make choices in alignment with our nature.
Right, right. Well, and it's not just once you know your nature. I mean, we all know our nature, but we can't always identify it with language. That's why Ayurveda is so helpful, because language helps us identify our nature. Like, I may understand that I tend to be a little bit passionate about my causes. Just a little. Just a little bit. So like when I used to go to like a cocktail party, you know, I would walk in and people would be talking to my friend and she would be chatty and people would have lovely light conversation with her. And I would meet someone, they'd say hi, and I'd be like, hi, what's your name? And they tell me their name. I'm like, so how do you feel about abortion?
Wow.
You know, and it was like, because I was interested, maybe I'd just been to a rally or I just, you know, and they would like step backwards and look at their watch and say things like, oh, gotta burp that Tupperware. And go talk to someone else, right?
That would be me. I'm the person who avoids confrontation at all costs, so I would go burp my Tupperware.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not that they did was inappropriate.
No.
Not that I was horribly inappropriate, maybe just a little, but the idea is that intensity is my nature. So once I understand that and don't feel bad about it, here's where I think the real healing for me in Ayurvedic study happens, is being able to accept who you are. I have a lot of fire. That's who I am. That's not going to go. I'm not going to all of a sudden get larger bones or deeper set joints or become lighter in my attitude and be able to, you know, have that ability to fly from one thing to the other, I'm going to have intensity. So I best make friends with it and learn to love it and support it, so then I can have the opportunity to work with it in a way that brings me joy and contentment, versus beating my head against it and trying not to be the gal who goes up to people at the party and says the most intense thing. I need to, like, maybe choose my cocktail parties more wisely. Mm. Or maybe know before I go in with awareness, with intention. Catherine, you know, when you meet somebody and after a few minutes, if they start talking about the subject you're invested in, then you can go for that. But maybe you should let yourself meet people in a way that's not as confrontational. So then, you know, you can have some of that enjoyment that that sort of light conversation might bring you. Mm, mm. You know, I can make those choices then. But if I don't know, if I don't have language or understanding to put to my tendencies and who I am in a physical body, in a water sack body, then even my daily actions might create greater imbalance because I'm not aware.
Sure.
I'm not aware of it.
Sure.
So it's all about that awareness and that mm-hmm. balance and that self-study that can mm-hmm. move us towards
self-study,
balance.
Good stuff.
And seeing it change each
The flexibility,
part of life.
Too. Yeah. Yeah, the flexibility is important,
right?
Too.
Sticking with something beyond when it's been useful, like my closet.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Clothes from the 80s, we'll
we
come
don't
back.
Want shoulder pads right now.
No,
Mama
no,
Kamali
no.
is still my friend, and unfortunately, she's not really helping me out when it comes to fashion right now, personally.
Uh-huh.
So the idea is that what might have worked for me in one stage of life, and I become accustomed to it, I now have to transition that as I change to another stage of life. And when I don't let myself make that transition with ease, I might then cause imbalance again.
Right, right.
So once what balanced me might actually start to cause an imbalance as I switch stages of life.
Yeah, yeah.
Sleep for teenagers.
Oh, yeah, they can sleep. I remember being a teenager, mm-hmm. and I mean, I could sleep until noon, and mm-hmm. then I would need a nap again at 5.
That's right, because you were growing. Your neural pathways were lateralizing. The physical bones were growing. The face changes shape. I watched my nose in, like, my, you know, 7-year-old to, like, 21-year-old pictures. My nose had its own life. It had its own shape. And it just...
You sometimes get up when you were sleeping.
Yeah, go down the hall. Yeah, yeah. Like your beard does.
Yeah, my beard does. It crawls down the hall and makes itself a sandwich.
Beard changes shape.
I don't know why that's such a funny image in my mind. I imagine, like, a bat crawling on the floor. That's probably going to gross people out.
But no, like, I think that's
my
fun.
Beard is lovely and beautiful.
While we're on the topic now of getting up for midnight snacks, that actually segues beautifully into my next question. Because I like midnight snacks.
Yes.
And my favorite midnight snack is an apple. And I know, Ayurvedically speaking, there is all kinds of stuff wrong with that. So I was wondering if you could illuminate some of these rules.
Uh-oh.
Like not eating fruit at night or not eating fruit with yogurt. That's one that I hear a lot. Mm-hmm. Or I think ghee and honey, not mixing them in equal parts.
She's talking about those secret rules of Ayurveda.
Oh, yeah.
You're not supposed to talk about those
sorcery.
Out loud.
Forbidden Ayurveda.
The title of the podcast,
Forbidden.
So can we start with that one?
Yeah.
What is wrong with my apples at midnight?
Nothing is wrong with your apple at midnight. If you can digest it beautifully and have a great quality sleep and you can get up in the morning and evacuate whatever remains of waste are there from the apple and your day is golden and you have unicorns and ponies or whatever it is
in
your day.
So many unicorns.
I know.
I love
I've
them.
Seen them actually, which, yeah.
In your auric field.
But the idea is if we can eat that at night and have no symptom or issue, then have an apple at night.
I can do that, so that makes me happy. What I can't do is fruit and yogurt.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Let's go back to your apple at night, though, for just a second. You might be able to do it because you're under the age of 50.
Okay.
And you have a great daily practice, and you do a lot of other things that help you stay balanced. So your Agni, your digestive fire, physical digestion, mental digestion, emotional digestion, psychological digestion, every cell has Agni, right?
Sure.
Agni is a big idea in Ayurveda. But your Jatra Agni, the main Agni that keys all the others in your belly, digestive Agni, is rock star. It's solid. It's what we call Sama Agni. It's even.
That's nice to know.
Yes, it is.
Tiger Agni.
Rockstar
Agni.
Yeah. I know. Look at that picture. Look at her Agni.
You have Tommy Lee's Agni.
That's right. Ooh, there it is. Rockstar.
The Agni Nikki Six. Motley Crue.
Motley Crue style Agni. You heard it here.
That's right. And only here. So the idea is that, you know, you've got that. So you eating the apple at night is not such a big deal. And if you eat it just occasionally, even less of a big deal. But let's imagine we give that to my sainted mother, Ruthie. Ruthie's 90 years old. She is also a rock star. However, her Agni is not Sama. Her Agni is what we call Vishma, or imbalance. It's irregular Agni. It goes up, it goes down. It's a Vata imbalance because it's like the wind. It's changeable. Oh. It's irregular. It's got those tendencies, those small g's, those qualities. Right. So if Ruthie were to get up in the middle of the night and eat an apple, first of all, she'd put her teeth in. It's like a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so that would take more energy and time than you to eat your apple. She probably would have a hard time going back to sleep because all of her energy would be at her belly digesting.
Mm.
And we have to have our energy to sleep be able to circulate throughout our body properly, because that's when we're doing our beginning of our rejuvenation period of our body. And for young people, young people, children, their body at nighttime and sleeping is growing. So it takes enormous energy. That's right. We get growing pains. Kids wake up an inch taller. I mean, the whole shebang's going on. Maybe not an inch, but, you know, they're getting taller. And the idea is that that energy is occurring during nighttime, which is why they sleep so long and which is why sometimes they need naps. And there's other things about that, too, but that's part of it.
Sure.
They're in kapha stage of life, which tends to be dull and sluggish when it goes out of balance anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea with the apple at night is it depends, back to our earlier favorite pairing of words,
mm-hmm.
it depends on your stage of life, it depends on your Agni, it depends on your dosha dominance, and probably the time of year. Having a raw apple in the middle of winter,
Yeah, that, you know, and I don't tend to do it as much in winter. I wonder if that's just...
That's because probably intuitively your Agni is not craving it. It's not looking for that. It probably understands balance to some degree.
And also the apples just aren't as delicious in wintertime that you can find. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not prevalent in New England.
Yes.
They're asleep in New England. So your apples are from Fiji or somewhere
else.
We aren't eating in season. So the body, when it's in better balance, when there's more constitutional balance, your element, you're more in alignment with your elements, you're more in walking in alignment with yourself, then the body is going to naturally crave those items that will keep you in balance. When you're more out of balance, when you're more related to your imbalance, your vikruti is the word in Sanskrit, when you're more related to your imbalance or have been longer in certain imbalances, the body is then attuning itself to keep it in imbalance.
Got it.
It's aligned with that state.
It's like a body in motion stays in motion,
yeah.
I mean, whether it's like mm-hmm. balance or imbalance. Mm-hmm. That's like Newtonian.
Yeah. Those rishis, they were good.
Perfect apple, you know, analogy there too.
Yeah, so that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I like that, right? So the idea is that's when we're looking at things like these super secret rules, don't tell.
Forbidden Ayurveda.
Then what happens is that we're having to understand the practical application of these rules. So the rules themselves arbitrarily don't often make sense.
Right.
You know, you're like, what?
No,
Gian, honey,
yogurt.
What's
going
on? What do the Danon people think about that? You know, so there's all these ideas because it's yummy and that's what we know.
Think of the Danon people.
yeah. There's the Danon people.
I know. And I think they're probably very nice. So I don't want to upset their business. But the reality is, if you're having issues like gas, bloating, constipation, or high acid, you know, either or on the scale, there are certain types of symptoms that will come from the accumulation of these small G's, these qualities, that will create disruption to the water sac's function, the body's function. And when that starts to happen, we need to look at what you're putting in the body.
Sure.
Right? So what you're putting in for your physical digestion, your foods and your beverages, what you're putting in for your mental digestion, what are you listening to, Tommy, turn off the radio,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's
right.
going on
what,
with
what
visually.
You're seeing. Mm-hmm. Sure. What the senses are taking.
What's being brought into the system, then we'll understand how the digestion's having to work. Are we having to turn up the volume on the acid because there's so much difficult to digest stuff coming in? Are we taking very little in? Are we not eating that much? Are we kind of having a bland sensory intake? And when we start to starve the body, I'm not talking clinically here, but,
sure.
you know, when I'm traveling and decide, you know, it's Pringles or nothing and I go with the nothing, I'm just saying, you know, I don't really know what a Pringles made of. I'm less worried about the Pringles people than I am the Danon people.
I think there might be like a potato starch in there somewhere. I don't know. A lot of salt.
Probably there's some natural
salt.
Flavoring.
Yeah. And they're cute. I like how they're styled like a little hair wave.
Brilliant.
Totally. It's kind of cute. But the idea is that you may have a choice where you're going to take the nothing over the whatever the potential food source is. But too much of that creates then very low Agni. Because we aren't feeding our fire, like if I'm on the choo-choo train.
So sometimes it's okay, even helpful, to choose the Pringle.
You know, I'm not saying that, but Kat did, and I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying. Yeah, because the idea is that the body has to have some intake of nutrient values and elements, Ayurveda would say, So we have to take in earth, water, fire, air, ether. We need to take those in. And the way Ayurveda looks at food, so the six tastes, is looking at the elements of the food. So each taste is relatable back to an element.
Okay.
So your apple, we're going to be the apple, right? Let's say it was a green apple, maybe?
Sometimes.
All right.
Sometimes
so
a green apple.
I tend to go for the tart green apples myself.
I like the tart ones.
Because, you know, I'm pitta and I like fire, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But earth, the crunch of the apple is the earth quality. It's the density, right? The sometimes sour quality of the green apple has that taste. Sometimes apples are sweet. They have that taste. They aren't generally pungent in nature so much, but they can be astringent.
If you have a pungent apple, you have a problem.
Snow White has been taking some of those.
Yeah.
Aside from Snow, you shouldn't take them. The idea is that...
she went to sleep.
That's right. It's a sleepy apple. So the idea is that we take our apple, we're also going to get that drying taste in the tongue, especially green apples, which is astringent. So an apple, you could be feeding those. Maybe during the day, maybe Kat, while you're having your apple at night, is during the day, you didn't get enough of the earth or the astringent. Astringent has earth element as well, right? Maybe sweet, which also has some earth in it. And so you're looking for those elements you haven't gotten. Because the body needs to feed all of the elements. That's how we look at digestion.
That's so interesting to me. It's just so interesting.
It is.
It changes the food pyramid or plate, for sure.
So could you explain briefly and actually Catherine has a great article on this, too, that we'll link to in the show notes that'll have more detail. Her Ayurvedic Abby column, by the way. If you have an Ayurvedic question that you want answered, you can email Ayurvedic Abby. I think Abby is A-B-B-I-E.
Yeah, she's my friend.
Yeah. Oh, A-B-B-I-E. I'm sorry. Your friend who looks very similar.
Yes, we were separated at birth. But yes.
Very similar.
Yes. Ayurvedic friend.
Yeah. Ayurvedic friend. But she has just as much knowledge. And you can email her at ayurvedicabby@yogainternational.com. And so in the latest column, we tackle these two rules. We tackle the first one is what we briefly discussed, the yogurt and the fruit. Now, why is that a no-no typically?
Okay, so the secret on this is think about yogurt. How do you make yogurt? What do you have to do to the milk product?
You have to add the yogurt culture to it.
Heat it.
Heat it, right? Uh-huh. It's a fermented food, right? So fermenting means it has what qualities? What small g's? What qualities would that be?
That would be...
This is their test. They're actually going for the certification.
This is hard.
And this is their live test. So if it's a fermented food, that means, is it going to create more... Let's do the virya. Is it going to create more cooling or heating in the body?
Got to be heating, right?
More heating in the body, right.
Virya? Okay, you're right.
Virya is this potency.
All right.
So the potency is either going to be... There's eight potencies, but we look at two mostly, heating and cooling. So I sound like a guy coming to your house and put your heating and cooling system.
Yeah.
Your Virya system. I mean, I don't know if you do that. Virya Architects.
I go with Kappa because Kappa's the best.
Yeah.
We watched Moonstruck the other night.
And, I love that snap out of it.
He said copper, and you could say Kappa.
Kappa.
That's right. So I like that. So back to our topic, sort of, which is that so it's heating. And then fruit, by its nature, has its own elemental qualities. The digestive acids that fruit require are so specific. And when we put those digestive acids in with an already hot fermented food that's dairy beneath it, we're going to have some problems with our digestion in general. So it's not that, again, if you have rock star Sama Agni, if you got the Tommy Lee Jones of Agni.
Oh, I feel that one in my tummy. When I do the fruit and yogurt smoothie, no bueno.
No bueno,
right. My
tummy's
not happy.
So, but let's imagine that day you were having like really good Agni and you were eating it in the middle time of day, which is when your Agni is at the highest, your largest meal. We call it dinner. Supper is supplemental meal. That's at the end of the day. Dinner's what we now call lunch.
I never knew that. Is that for real? Or did you just... What?
Yeah, okay. I didn't make it. I have no original thoughts.
It's going to be a Google day when this is
done. That's what my grandparents did. My grandparents always... Lunch was dinner and dinner was supper.
Supper. Yeah, you'll supper. You're going to sup on your... It's the supplemental meal. It's usually the leftover from the big lunch that the farmers had. That's why we had hot lunches at school.
You're blowing my mind, Catherine.
So no, you know, that's what happened, right? So we're an agrarian society.
Ayurveda, the history of agriculture. We've got it all today.
That's right, exactly. And so we're almost on point. And so the farmers weren't going to send their kids to school because they were going to miss dinner, right? So they brought their pails of hot meals to school and they could have the family dinner. So when they went back home that night, that evening, did their evening chores, they could have their supper, their supplemental meal in that way. And so then American school system came up with hot lunches, which now have sort of digressed to like square things that they call pizzas and the whole night. But
Lunchables.
But that was why, you know, we kind of had hot lunches. Anyhow, back to our yogurt.
Yes.
So we have to watch what we're combining with our food. It's not a huge watchdog situation, but you want to be mindful and aware, feeling out what's going on with your Agni to understand what days. If you want to have your Danone or whatever company yogurt with fruit, it's not, you know, there's heroin, there's fruit yogurt. Okay.
Right.
Don't have the heroin. Mm-hmm. All right. Because it's not going to help you out in life. I'm just saying, unless maybe there's some huge problem and your physician requires it for pain management. But you can have fruit yogurt and do okay in life. Mm. Right? It's not going to cause that big of an issue, but if you have it all the time, it could cause a bigger issue to your digestion.
I'm really glad you said that, too, because I think sometimes we can get so caught up in these rules that we can almost get to a point where life is not fun anymore.
We become fanatics.
Yeah. I had fruit with my yogurt. Now I'm ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I've got to go to bed.
I got to cleanse.
There's so much. Wait, when we get on the cleanse. Yeah, and the problem is, it's fear. You know, we just want to know. And when you're beginning to learn a subject like Ayurvedic medicine, and that's one of the reasons, back to your earlier point, people reduce themselves initially when you're learning this technology or you're learning this language of Ayurvedic medicine, you want to own it. And we actually ask people in AYS training, and when I was in my Ayurvedic training, you know, we would go to the courtyard of the school and watch people walk by. Mm. And we would say, red cape, pitta kapha, and we'd talk about the qualities that were there. We would do, you know, we'd identify people what they're wearing. So when we all went back in the classroom, we could compare notes.
Are you seeing Superman at the kapha?
Right, yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
The flying thing makes him perhaps tridoshic, but I think that's more of a siddha. I'm just saying. Maybe we're going to go there. So, but yeah, pitta kapha's hairless. The guy doesn't, there's no hairy chest
that's
on him.
True.
So
that's
yeah,
true.
So it's pitta kapha. But anyhow, so, and he's got strong joints. So the idea is that we would sit out there and look at their qualities, and just by identifying those traits in the water sac, the physical body, and the tendencies of their movements. We're watching what's going on with their dash, dab, what they're doing with their physical, how they're moving their body in space. We're looking at their tendencies of the colors that they're wearing, you know, the seasons. Mm-hmm. You're taking the whole external image in to understand the prakriti, the nature, in that way. But if I'm just learning Ayurveda and I've got, like, I read the book or I took the dosha test, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Kat, you skipping down the hall is so vata. That's not wrong.
Sure.
But it's not the comprehensive picture.
Right.
Right.
And then that doesn't get ingrained, that kind of could get ingrained in me, like, oh, I'm vata. And then I start to identify myself that way, or start to maybe feel a little bad about myself because maybe I think there's something wrong with being vata.
Yeah, right.
Then your judgments and your criticisms, those will happen. And
then
the thing I think that happens is that we reduce ourselves, much like in psychiatry, we don't reduce the client to their symptoms. The client sometimes will.
Sure.
Or other people will. Oh, yeah. My friend Susie, you know, she's got a lot of anxiety, which sort of discounts in her behavior or excuses the behavior, whatever's going to happen, or maybe creates compassion for the behavior. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, she's not anxiety. There's like these symptoms or experiences of certain qualities, and what you may call anxiety, I may not agree with.
Uh-huh.
I may call it excitement.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of like the importance of, even in languaging, people first language, too. Like, we would never we shouldn't anyway, call a person by their disease. Like, oh,
no,
that's a depressive. Like, that would be horrible.
Yes.
I mean, certainly it's a little bit different when we're looking at the doshas, because we all have doshas and properties.
Right.
But that maybe it's not so helpful to say pittas do this or vatas do this. Even just to simply say people with a pitta prakriti might be more inclined to X, or it might be more commonly seen in people who, and yes, linguistically it's a little clunkier, but I think that it's worth it.
This is one of those times where people would say, well, it's all the semantics, we're just arguing semantics, but actually the way we use language is important, because it actually also indicates where we are in our deeper energetic fields intentionally. And oftentimes it's my observation that when people want to reduce folks to their dosha or to some condition, it's because we're feeling sort of like terrified of being groundless, and we need to, like, we're afraid of vulnerability.
Right.
So we're trying to put something in a box so that we don't have to feel that terror of being uncertain or without ground.
Or seen.
Right. And it's like, that intention is actually kind of driven by sort of fear rather than uplift.
Freedom, right. Yeah. Being vulnerable, you know, I mean, there are times that you want to be able to express your vulnerability. And there's times to be very wise and not to do that. You know, on the subway in Manhattan, which is really nice compared to what it was 20 years ago, I don't really necessarily want to walk in all open and vulnerable.
No.
It's not going to serve me well. I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah, but maybe some containing is good.
Containing is good, or shielding. Mm. Like there are times, you know, when you're around a bunch of goo that someone's trying to fly at you, it's good to have the ability to put the shields up.
It is.
It's the same thing, you know, it's like when we're working with, you know, to take a direct route to mantra, but when we're reciting mantra in this tradition, you know, it's both something that helps accelerate our attunement with who we are as a spiritual being and protective. Mm-hmm. Tantra is about protecting as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right? The tra verb, right?
Yeah, tra. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Same as in mantra.
Mantra, yantra.
To guide and to protect.
Right. So yeah. Vulnerability is valued because it allows us to be closer to who we are with compassion, with love, with a sense of deep respect and attunement. But there are times when we come in contact with experiences or others in our lives that we don't want to have that soft belly exposed because it would put us in danger.
Yeah.
Right? And until we're able to feel more integrated, I think it's wise to use your discernment to understand when to make yourself available to the other with your vulnerability and when to be able to choose to see their vulnerability maybe instead of seeing their shields, because shields tend to be kind of tough to penetrate.
Yeah.
Right? And so
spiny and like shelly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They get
very hard and rigid, and when we see that we bump up against it, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're more fire in nature, you might get angry about it. Mm-hmm. If you're more air in nature, you might blow away from it and avoid it.
Sure.
Right? Or misinterpret and keep, you know, trying to spiral around it, you know. And if you're more water and earth in nature, you'll just let yourself accumulate and just sit. You won't move in that way. You become frozen in that way. So elements, if we talk about elements instead of doshas, kind of gets us out of that reduction.
Yeah, it's less about like, I'm a this and right. I'm a that, and therefore, and it's more about what we keep coming back to, just the finding balance and the getting to know ourselves.
Right.
And Ayurveda can be a great tool for that.
Yeah, embrace who you really are. Yeah. And you'll find it's like when I was an actor for an hour and a half, I used to go, I was in my 20s and I wanted to be the ingenue. I wanted to like go through the field and fall and have someone save me. I really was like, this would be great. I could wear cool outfits. I get like, all, you know, and I really wanted to do that. And I'd audition and oddly, you know, was never chosen. But when I would audition for like the brassy best friend or this on stage, I used to play all these matrons. I was in my 20s. Mm. I was just a little horrified that I was wigged, you know, with gray hair all the time. No sex, please, or British, and I'm like the cranky old lady. But the reality was, I was really good at the cranky old lady, you know, because I get that.
That,
you know,
part is more fun to play.
It truly was.
It really is.
Yeah. I was the evil, you know, the brunette evil twin,
oh,
you know,
nice.
Like, which was great.
Yeah.
You know? But the reality is, I would be upset at getting those parts because my ahamkara was weak. My understanding of who I was very, and some might argue still is, but was, you know, very out of touch. And so because I wasn't getting the parts I thought I should because of who I was like, the 20-year-old ingenue in the world, and I was getting the, you know, brassy best friend or the kind of intended directed villain or the senior who was kind of smarty pants, I was thinking, you know, again, I'm that's who I am, and that's who they're identifying me as. And I don't like that. I don't want to be that. That's not me. I'm this other person. But the reality is that when you have a lot of, and I was a bad actress, so there's that, okay? But the idea is that if I was more in attunement with who I was, I could maybe even then manipulate those qualities if I wanted to play the ingenue better, because I would have awareness of those qualities.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I could embrace the fact I was working, it was great, and I would go for more of those roles. So imagine this in relationships in the real world, right? If I think I'm not someone who is direct and intense, more fire, and I keep trying to engage with people and not understanding why I'm getting feedback of, you know, that was really direct. Do you think, you know, could you soften that? I mean, I really appreciate what you're saying, but it's kind of hard to hear. Or could you go soft on that person? And I would hear it as, you know, you don't like who I am.
Yeah.
But it's just that quality, right? And as you get older and as you become more aware, or even when you're young and if you're aware, you can begin to modulate the way you're engaging with the world because you know who you are and what you're bringing.
That's brilliant. That's kind of really what we're longing for, I think. Mm-hmm. That's the whole person acting in the world.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And we need all the doshas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when it comes to applying this to our lives, Ayurveda, from what I'm gathering from this conversation, is quite useful.
Yeah.
But a lot of times life doesn't align with what we might think of as an Ayurvedic ideal, you know, rising early, having time to practice. What about people who work third shift or maybe have three or four jobs, maybe single parents, people whose schedules are not attuned to the Ayurvedic clock? How can we apply Ayurveda to our lives, or are we just out of luck?
Well, it's a great question, and I've been bumping up against this a lot in private practice, and even more recently, working in New Haven, Connecticut, right? And so we have a mix socioeconomically, and so what I hear sometimes is that yoga is just for the people who can afford it, which is very expensive in New Haven. I mean, it is all over, and studios are really kind, trying to, you know, help people out with specials and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we have a whole podcast on all that, actually. I think it's Yoga for the Rich.
Yeah, yeah.
Check it out, listeners.
Right, yeah. And so the idea is that, so how do we, and an Ayurvedic lifestyle actually often bumps up more against that than it does for some folks which have, you know, a little bit more challenge, because the daily application of Ayurveda is very simple. It's not expensive. You can't really buy it in a bottle. You know, it's really about daily application and really having an attachment to self-care, attuning to that. Certainly, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic class is, you can do that. But the reality is that some of us who are middle class or upper class might be able to buy more of our self-care products or have people do things to us for self-care.
Like go get a massage.
Or, you know, whatever, the peel, scrunch, whatever that is.
That balanced my chakras with cucumbers on my eyes.
Yeah, and whatever. Which is, and listen, you know what? If it works for you, go for it. No judgment
at all.
I love
a good cucumber peel scrunch.
Yeah, dude, it's great. But the reality is that, you know, Ayurveda really helps navigate the whole society. And one of the things we're working on in New Haven is this wraparound program where we're taking Ayurvedic principles and we're bringing it to the clients we have, for example, at our clinic. And we're trying to help them understand if they can just begin to regulate themselves by the Ayurvedic clock in that works for them with their jobs and with their life. So maybe I'm working third shift, for example, with some of our clients, and they are having trouble, you know, obviously they're getting up, going to work at 7 at night and working through the night. So that part of the Ayurvedic clock, they're not going to be able to attune to. That's not going to be something, for socioeconomic reasons, they need to keep that job. But they can still change their diet. They can still change, get six tastes in at every meal. They can still begin to look at how to work with the other aspects of incorporating balance that will support them to navigate this time in their lives, which hopefully is not forever, you know, I don't know, that they can work third shift. Mm. Because you want to support people where they are.
Yeah.
You don't want them to have to come out to you.
No,
that's not
going to
work.
And we don't, as, you know, fellow yoga practitioners, humans, anybody want to shame people for things that they have to do. Like, oh, well, you're not waking up and
you're not at 5:30, Kat.
Yeah. No wonder you have gas. You work third shift.
Yeah. And the thing about getting up is it's, you know, it depends. If people with more kapha dominance during the kapha time of day, which is in the morning, will have more trouble getting up. It's just their nature. You know, where Tigger, you know, the Vata with some Pitta, maybe Vata Pitta Prakriti, as soon as light shines, they're up there boinging around the house, you know, which is great, great energy. And maybe he's saying, well, why are you being such a sloth to their Kapha partner, right? And the Kapha partner is not being a sloth. They're just being more Kapic. And so that's who they are. And so to be a little easy and gentle, and also not to shame the Tigger Pitavata who's boinging around the house.
Needing their coffee, maybe, even though they're already boinging.
Are we having the revolutionary thought that maybe we should have more compassion in our hearts?
Oh my God.
Read more Winnie the Pooh.
Some metta, some Maitri.
You know, the Tao of Pooh exists
I
for
love
a reason.
That book. Yes. We were talking about that this morning with Keith, one of the guys that works in our kitchen here, about why Pooh is the ultimate Zen master because he liked his honey. Which is a pravab. It's like this magical quality. Another secret of Ayurveda.
Forbidden Ayurveda.
Forbidden. And it's, you know, a tridoshic substance, but has certain properties, which lends itself better to supporting one of the other qualities. But I said, you know, here's a guy, you know, round, pretty much present all the time in the Mona, has a great practice, Pooh does, and he eats honey.
What do you think that poo is kappa, probably?
It's got a little kappa Prakriti dominance. Yeah, kappa vata.
Okay,
yeah,
I could see that.
Yeah, not a lot of fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. He wore the red shirt. I mean, I'm just saying.
Oh, maybe that's good for his little balance.
Maybe he was balancing that. He needed more pitta in his life.
Yeah, and honey, raw honey can be heating.
Uh-huh.
I have a whole thing on, yeah.
The Ayurveda of poo.
I love this.
Templeton.
I know. Shh. Copyright.
Oh, you heard it first on Yoga Talk.
So I think we'll wrap it up here in a minute, but I really wanted to ask you a question, Catherine.
Yes?
And I know you have a video on this, too.
Uh-oh.
So as regular listeners of this podcast may know, I have a little bit of an axe to grind with juice cleanses.
The J word.
I don't like the idea of not eating food and fasting and cleansing. Like, I'm happy to eat a mostly healthy diet, but when it comes to, like, drinking green stuff in lieu of actual sustenance, that's where I kind of draw the line.
Yeah.
But in yoga, it's quite popular. And, you know, I don't care if anybody else does it. I just feel a little bit sometimes of that peer pressure, like, oh, you've got to do a juice cleanser. Mm. You're not a real yogi. And I don't want to. So
everybody else is doing it. Come on, get on your mat. Have yourself a green smoothie.
Yeah. Mm. So what does Ayurveda have to say about that? Would Ayurveda recommend that I just suck it up and do the juice cleanse? Or does Ayurveda have a different take on the fasting, cleansing, juicing kind of thing?
I know. So just predict. What are the two words I'm going to say? It depends. So here's the idea. First of all, 80-20 rule, just to say that out loud. So 80% of the time, we want to eat according to Ayurvedic principles. 20% of the time, we're going to go, you know, have our smoothie, which is fine. But we have to kind of go back to the sub-doshas of Ayurveda. So all of you get out your horn-rimmed glasses and your nerd booklet and let's look it up. Right?
Costuming, I love it.
Yeah, it's all about costuming.
I want makeup.
So yeah, exactly. And we want to get out our sub-dosha text. And we know that sub-doshas are the way we understand dosha. So it's not just these six qualities, these gunas. It's also different ways in which the properties of those elements live in our physical bodies. Mm. So sub-doshas are related to the physical orientation of and energetic orientation of those qualities in our body. So there is one sub-dosha of kapha called buddhika, and it resides in the mouth and the saliva. So the saliva that coats our food that helps us identify what enzymes, you know, I always say there's a guy named Tom that lives by my pyloric valve. And so, when the saliva in my mouth, I don't know why. And so when the saliva in my mouth, like, identifies papaya, Tom's like, all right, bring out the papaya digesting enzymes.
Tom and is a helpful guy.
Right, opens
like
that up.
The Miyazaki film, the guy who's like the Spirited Away guy.
Exactly. But if Tom doesn't get the right information from the buddhika kappa, then it's going to be harder to be able to be on top of which valves to open when and how and for how long and so forth. And so when my food passes through my mouth without the ability to chew it and discern it with the saliva, it's going to create a little bit of a, it's not impossible, but Tom's going to be having like a, you know, working for a living kind of background music where he's out there pulling the valves to get the digestive
juices. So he can't hear. He can't hear the chewing upstairs.
He can't discern what's coming down the pike. I know. Thomas is, if you don't know him. But
Thomas.
Yeah. So the idea is that's one thing. So having beverages, you know, we talk about this with beverages. You know, when you've taken something and you've juiced it, right, you're taking away some of the other properties that help with digestion too, like the pulp of something will help with digestion. Just like in herbology, when we're taking herbs, we want to know if we're taking the root or the leaf or the flower, or are we taking the whole herb? Because when you take the whole plant in a certain proportion, it actually helps counterbalance the alchemy of it.
Okay.
So the alchemy of the root and the flower and the leaf have this synergistic, complete system of balance, according to it. And oftentimes we choose to take the root because we want a specific effect, but we know the antidote is probably found in the flower or the leaf. There's a way in which the plants have their own organic balance. And so when we're taking foods, it's not that I'm getting to the smoothie. Hold on. It's not that it's wrong or bad, but it's just how it affects you.
Right.
How it chooses to affect you. So chewing, we have teeth for a reason. right? We actually, in yoga, we talk about breathing in and out through the nose mm-hmm. because the turbines in the nose do specific things to the air.
Yes, filter it, clean it, right. moisten it.
Right. And you can't, have you ever tried to chew stuff in your nose? Like you could, you know, like my brother used to.
Well, I'm going to after the podcast, you're crazy, Catherine.
Well, no, my brother used to, sorry, Bob, used to stick chewing gum up his nose when he was a little boy. I think like to save it for later. We weren't a really attractive family.
Maybe he was doing like some kind of naughty shunum or something.
Yeah, it was Chandra Pinda. And we had to go to the hospital a couple times to have that removed. So the idea is that, you know, you can't digest through your nose things that are more substantial in that way, that will have more earth, water, and fire elemental qualities, right? Air and ether you can digest through the nose, mm-hmm. but not through, but digestion will only occur of earth, water, and fire through the mouth. So to some degree. So we need to chew our food. And in Ayurvedic medicine, you know, we're all about chewing more than 5, 10, or 15 times, which most Americans, you know, that's, I mean, watching my
I'm in a hurry. I don't have time, but more than gulp things down.
I know. It's like watching Jack. It's like watching him spackle. You know, he takes food and he kind of rubs his fork over it, takes food, you know, and I've taught him that, so I'm to blame. But you know, the reality is we're a fast eater. It's like we have 20 at our table and there's four of us. We're like, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So our big sadhana, our big practice with food in my family is trying to slow down
so
we can taste the food to give Tom, my pyloric valve engineer, time to identify with the bodhicitta kapha, what are these tastes that are coming in? So Ayurvedic medicine, we look at not only the elemental quality of the food, but what are the tastes, the rasa. Rasa means juice, plasma, taste, many things. So when we start understanding these smoothies, I have a combination of tastes usually, right? So and I'm combining foods. So if I'm putting yogurt in with my fruit in with ice, what are the qualities? Break them down. What's the quality of ice? Is it hot or cold?
It's cold.
It's cold. Is it hard or soft?
Hard.
So it's more related to?
More related to vata.
Vata, right? So because those are some of the qualities. It's not purely that. It's made of water, right? But it's hard, cold water, right? So it has more vatic qualities. And then I'm going to take my yogurt, let's say, and put it in there. And yogurt, we said earlier, has what quality?
It's fiery.
It's heating. It's got hot qualities. It can be sour. Sour elementally is fire as well and has some earth in it. So those are different qualities. So you start looking in Ayurvedic medicine, what are the qualities, what are the tastes and the elements you're putting into your body? And if I'm putting in fruit then, like let's say I'm putting in like a little ripened banana, right? Especially bananas and dairy.
Banoon. Yeah.
So tasty.
I know, evil poisons. So banana and milk, for example, I'm putting banana in yogurt, which is fermented component of milk product, then I'm putting this very sweet, heavy, right, wet quality, this gunas that are more like what dosha?
Kapha.
Kapha, right?
Yeah.
So you would think, well, this is a great multi-elemental meal. Why can't I have it? Because Tom down there is going to get it like that. And he can't, the saliva hasn't had a chance to break down those qualities. The enzymes haven't had a chance to be able to be released. And in Ayurvedic medicine, we've got some other principles that play with Agni. But this is problematic.
So chunky monkey ice cream, you're saying, like a little pint of Ben & Jerry's chunky monkey would make things very difficult for poor Tom.
If we had it every day.
Okay.
But 80-20. Have yourself your chunky monkey. Go enjoy that. Have yourself your smoothie, but have it in such a way that you're not going to create a profound impact on your digestify, your Agni. And if you're going to have it, you want to counterbalance it then with something that's not going to challenge your Agni. So if I'm going to have my smoothie, have it at the time of day when my Agni is at its best, which
should be around lunchtime.
Around lunchtime, right? Don't have it first thing in the morning because my Agni is more kapic and it's going to be a little bit lower, a little bit duller, heavier. And we're taking products that can be kind of heavy and sweet. We've already talked about the sour can be heavy because of all the moisture that's created.
Don't have it if you feel alienated by a modern culture and groundless and you need something to grab onto to make yourself feel whole.
And if you've identified that good people have smoothies, that's problematic as well because everybody can have a smoothie. It doesn't matter. You know,
it's that value judgment again.
Right.
Like a real yogi would do this.
Right.
Or a real Ayurvedic person, healthy person, whatever person
would do this. Yeah. Right. And the thing is, yogis have different diets than Ayurvedes. Remember, yoga's purpose is for self-realization. Ayurveda's purpose is to have optimal health in the water sack while you're here so you can sit and do your practices towards self-realization. So yogi diets are often not Ayurvedic. quite often. Oh. The fast, the juice cleanses, those aren't necessarily, Ayurveda doesn't say this is going to give you your longest health. You're going to be able to ride the subway every day and get to work and do your, you know, third shift job having smoothies.
Right. No, that's always been the biggest struggle that I've had with it, actually, is for a long time I worked in retail and I taught a lot of yoga classes and I was in school and I needed a substantial amount of calories just to support my lifestyle and to eat at certain times so I could stay awake and alert. And when the idea of juice cleansing would come in, I would think, yeah, right. Maybe if I could just stay home and take naps all day in between my juices.
Right.
It's about making something sustainable to your lifestyle and your constitution. Mm-hmm. And then it sounds like joyfully, happily, then not being so hard on ourselves or not comparing ourselves to other people and their constitutions and their lifestyles and their needs, because we're all different.
Right. And thank goodness we're all different. And so when you're going to do your juice cleanse, if you're going to do a juice cleanse, if someone were going to do a juice cleanse, what prakriti would have the best benefit from a juice cleanse? I mean, just if we're going to generalize, what prakriti?
I would think kapha. They would be able to have a little bit more substance.
They have more durability, but here's the thing.
A lot of folks might need a rib cleanse.
Why you think that with kapha? Kapha tends to get, its agni tends to go low.
Ah.
So if I'm cleansing and I'm pouring sweet liquids in, so you have to think about how long that kapha is going to do it. What are we going to do to counterbalance and support the Agni? Is this part of a Panchakarma program? Which actually we wouldn't do juicing in Panchakarma, not at all. We actually would do a mono diet of khichdi, which has six tastes. It is very nutritive, and is, you know, rice and mung bean. You must chew it, even though it's soupy.
You add a little caffeine to that khichdi, and I might be on board.
Well, we'll do our super chai medicine for you on that. But that's the idea, is that, you know, cleansing in Ayurveda, it's not that we're saying juice cleanses are bad or not Ayurvedic, but you have to think how you're going to take them, who you're going to take them. Think about their Agni, and what is your reason for doing that cleanse in that way? 80-20 rule for everyday living. Can you have a smoothie? Absolutely you can have a smoothie. But if you're going to have that smoothie, understand what you're setting up for yourself digestively. And there may be times in your life when having smoothies will actually create more problems for your digestion. Or these juice drinks. But other times, they might help as part of a complex of alchemy to support you being able to have a healthy agni, a healthy sense of balance in your daily energy levels, and some joy in what you're tasting. You know, it's a sensual pleasure eating.
It is.
And we want to support your sensual pleasures. Ayurveda is all about balance of your sensual pleasures.
Well, like what we learned about on our sex podcast, that receiving pleasure, we said it built ojas, or
it supported
ojas.
Being in nature, eating good foods that taste good, being around people of like-minded company who are wonderful, you know, hearing sounds of nature, sounds of laughter. This
shades of joy.
Yeah, it's all good.
Sounds of laughter, shades.
That's right.
Did I get that wrong?
Okay. No, I don't think so. That was good. Yeah, I just can't get that high.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, letting yourself find those qualities to bring in a sense of attunement with your joyful nature is important. And when we get fanatical, I mean, I'm not going to say all juice cleansers are fanatical because that'd be wrong.
Right.
But we can become fanatical about whatever we're taking and however we take it. You know, the grapefruit diet, the paleo diet, vegan diet.
Fanaticism.
The Ayurvedic diet.
Or gets really narrow.
Lemonade thing.
That's right. The yogi diet. I mean, Ayurvedic diet, we can all become fanatical about it. And Dr. Laud does a beautiful job of talking about this in his textbook. He talks about the golden rule of Ayurveda. He's not alone in this. Chatika talks about it, but the idea is everything is got to be taken with a sense of how will it help build sustainability. When we become fanatical, we become hard and rigid, and we can break.
Yeah.
Break.
We're talking about the vidya. We're talking about
the inner vidya there. That's right.
Fanaticism of any kind.
That's right.
No bueno.
We're all fanatics in some way, maybe in our own right.
Well,
like that just speaks to where we could maybe, instead of pointing fingers at they and them, you know, with me, like those juice cleansers, like maybe I could look to myself a little
how
bit.
How am I a fanatic?
And, yeah. And
what makes me fanatical?
Yeah, we could flip it around and say we're passionate. I mean, I think there is a difference between fanatical and being passionate.
That's true.
I do think being fanatical means I'm going to resist the opportunity to have a permeable boundary and to let some things in.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Right? And you want to keep that boundary permeable. That's what your dermis, your skin has pores that allow nourishment to come in and waste to move out. And so same for me anyhow with my life, which is if I become a fanatic and you're all good or all bad, I'm not really seeing you. And you know, true, I have my own feelings about the political system, but I also understand that it's important to have conversations and to keep those conversations alive, because when I stop the conversation by just pointing the finger and saying you're wrong, I'm not allowing for growth or development in either of us.
This is brilliant. And this is good stuff.
This is really what we want to do even in diet with Ayurveda. That's why it changes every season. If I stay with the same diet all year long, I'm becoming a fanatic to that diet. The diet's governing me, and I'm not living in concert with myself. Mm-hmm. Same with stages of life. It has to change because we change and our needs change, and we want to stay in relationship to that continually transformative quality of who we are. You know, the impermanence of it all.
Mm.
And that allows us to be in the flow of it. And as soon as we get rigid, we start having suffering, symptomology, pain, discomfort.
And life is no fun anymore.
It's no fun.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we want to have fun.
This is good stuff.
We just want to have fun.
Mm-hmm. Boys, too, want to do that.
Girls and boys, yogis just want to have fun. Do-do-do-do-do.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end it. A little Cyndi Lauper.
Very little, but yes, that's right. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Catherine. I learned so much today, and I'm definitely excited to continue to learn more. And listener, you can learn more with all of the great resources that Catherine has for us, as well as other Ayurvedic experts as well, on yogainternational.com. We have videos, we have articles. Just go to our health channel and go to Ayurveda and Natural Health, and you'll find lots. And we are, as we finish this podcast, going to film an e-course with Catherine right now.
Yay!
So you can check that out pretty soon, as well as her other e-courses. And you can email your Ayurvedic questions again to her suspiciously look-alike friend, Ayurvedic Abby.
She's lovely.
At Ayurvedic Abby, that's ABBIE, at yogainternational.com. And you can email your questions for Michael and me, probably not your Ayurvedic questions, because we're just going to ask Catherine, but any questions, comments, anything about the podcast show ideas to yogatalk@yogainternational.com. And we are going to take you out with our dear friends, the Householders. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.